fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Tremendous Thursday to you. So glad you're with me today on the Cale Clark Show. Faith, facts, and fun. It's the name of the game. You've had enough bad news today. It's time to give you some good news. And here's some more good news. You can call me for free through the wonders of technology. Alexander Graham Bell made this possible. At the time, it was revolutionary, but we take it for granted. But you can still call me from wherever you may be. Toll free, 1-888-914-9149. Once again, 1-888-914-9149 is the toll free line for the Cale Clark Show. You can also email the program, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. Great place to send your questions in if you're too shy to get on the horn and call me. And you can also tweet at me, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. And speaking of that show account, producer Lucas, we've got a bit of a poll going right now on our show account. It's all about how old was St. Joseph. This is the year of St. Joseph. Lots of talk about St. Joseph. And I actually learned something new about this. Some new pieces of evidence that I had not considered before. Well, they were new to me anyways, and it kind of blew my mind. I'm going to be sharing that with you in just a couple moments. How old was St. Joseph? Some people in the church think he was a really old man who was a widower, who had a children from a previous marriage, and that's who these brothers and sisters of Jesus are, and he marries Mary just simply to be her guardian. And then there's the other view, which holds that he's a young, robust guy in the prime of his life. Where are people coming down on this right now, Lucas, on the poll?
I kid you not, right now it is 50-50.
Wow, so no right, kidding, right 50, on.
50% right at 50-50. Team old Joseph, 50% team young Joseph. So
wow.
If you have a strong opinion about it, go to the Cale Clark Show account on Twitter and cast your vote. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I checked in earlier in the day, and young Joseph was winning by like quite a wide margin, 67%. And then you told me earlier this afternoon that old Joseph had taken the lead. He's a crafty old guy. He took the lead somehow. I don't know if he tripped up young Joseph or not, but he took the lead. And yeah. And now it's 50-50.
It's 50-50.
So how about that?
Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah, and I just to set the stage for you, let me just lay out the options for you guys. And then I'll tell you about the new evidence that I heard, which blew my mind. It absolutely blew my mind. And it might sway me here. So how old was he? Well, the Eastern wing of the church, traditionally, and I wrote a couple blog posts about this years ago, and we'll link to it in the show notes. In the Eastern part of the church, there was a traditional thought that Joseph was an older man who was betrothed to Mary, married her not for the purposes of romance, but for protection, to be her legal guardian, in a sense. Because the idea here is that Mary had always planned on being a virgin dedicated to the service of God. And that was a rare position. That was a rare position to take in the first century in ancient Israel. But it wasn't unheard of, the idea of consecrated virginity, as it were, at that time. There are some other examples of this, even in that same generation that Mary belonged to. Jesus himself, obviously. St. Paul, and most people think that Paul was celibate, at least while he was doing his ministry. Was he married previously? That's an interesting question. A lot of people say yes, a lot of people say no. Some of the Essenes, and the Essenes were the guys who wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls, who lived down by the Dead Sea and the caves there and in other places. Some of the Essenes embraced celibacy. John the Baptist as well. You could also talk about Anna the prophetess. She's mentioned by Luke in Luke chapter 2. That's she's mentioned in the account of the presentation along with the old man Simeon. And I actually talked about that very, very recently on the Faith Explained program because we're doing a brand new series called The Biblical Roots of the Rosary. So I'm going through those mysteries of the Rosary. Where do you find them in the Bible? And that's one of them. And I just talked about that. So check the podcast for that if you want more on Anna. But Anna was briefly married in her youth. She was married for 7 years, and then she was a widow. And the Bible's kind of unclear as to how long she was a widow for. It either says she was a widow until she was 84, or she was 84 years a widow. And actually, I kind of think that the Greek text makes more sense to say that she was 84 years a widow. So she would actually be like incredibly old for that time, 105 years old at least, if that was the case. In ancient Israel, you could be married as early as 14. And it wasn't unheard of for 13-year-old girls to be betrothed. So if she got married early, she could be, 105 years old. But anyways, so she was briefly married. After she became a widow, she spends the rest of her time, the rest of her days, worshiping in the temple. So she could have ostensibly sought to be married again, but she didn't do that. And a lot of people think that Mary was planning on being something like that, a consecrated virgin. There's an apocryphal story about Mary that's not in the Bible. It's part of an early Christian document called the Proto-Evangelium of James, this concept that her parents basically just dropped her off at the temple and she was just going to live there. And she was planning on consecrated virginity. And this is why when the angel comes to her and says, hey, you're going to have a kid, he's going to be the Messiah. The angel said nothing about a virginal conception or anything like that, no miracle yet, other than the angel himself being there, of course, standing in front of her. But that's not even really a miracle. It's just a revelation of from the world that we can't see that's all around us, the spiritual world. But at any rate, Gabriel says this to her, and she says, well, how is this possible since I'm a virgin? Now, Luke has already told us that she is engaged to be married at this point, so why would she even say that? Okay, I'm an engaged woman. You're telling me I'm going to have a kid. That would be what one might expect. You're saying, I'm going to have a child. I'm saying back to you, Mary says, how is this possible since I'm a virgin? So a lot of people think that she had already planned on this consecrated virginity, that Joseph is just marrying her to be her protector. That's the view, that he's this older man. You can't be a single woman in the first century running around Jerusalem. It's just, you had to have someone to protect you. If you didn't have family, you're kind of out on the street. So that was a precarious position to be in. So you needed to have a guardian. So an older Saint Joseph might fit the bill. And anyways, the concept of, I'm just laying out the case for the older Joseph, and I'll lay out the case for the younger Joseph in just a moment. But the concept of Joseph being older also might explain some stuff too that people have always scratched their heads about. Most notably, why is Joseph not there during the public ministry of Jesus when he's an adult? And the presumption is that he has died by this point, because the mother of Jesus is obviously mentioned at key points at the beginning of his ministry, and she pops in a couple times during the ministry. Really, we don't see her again until the foot of the cross, but Joseph is nowhere to be found at all. And that's most acutely felt at the crucifixion, because Jesus gives his mother into the care of not Joseph, but the apostle John. And that is absolutely inconceivable for in the Jewish first century world if Joseph was still alive at that time. You can read about that in John chapter 19. And according to some strains of tradition, Joseph was, again, said to have been a widower whose first wife had died sometime before. And that's where these quote-unquote brothers and sisters of Jesus come from. We read about them in the New Testament. Simon, Joseph, Jude, the sisters of Jesus. Who are these people? Under this view, they are Joseph's children from a previous marriage. So they're stepsisters, stepbrothers of Jesus under this view, not children of Mary. So that's the one view. That's the one view of Joseph as an older guy. Well, what about the view that he is younger? This is also something that you see in church history. A lot of spiritual writers do talk about this. I'm going to give you a take on this right now. So is it possible that he was younger when he became, in his prime, when he became the adoptive father of Jesus? So under this view, it would still be possible, if he was younger, to say, yeah, Joseph did know about Mary's prior commitment to consecrated virginity. It's also a view that, I don't think this is likely, but some people in church history have thought that Mary and Joseph had a romance and they were planning a quote-unquote normal marriage all along until Mary discovers, no, God's got another plan for us. I'm supposed to be the mother of the Messiah. Well, here's what St. Jose Maria Escrivá said about this. He was the founder of Opus Dei. He had a tremendous devotion to St. Joseph, and he was very, very passionate about this idea that St. Joseph was younger. In 1963, he said this in a homily. He said, quote, "I don't agree with the traditional picture of St. Joseph as an old man. even though it may have been prompted by a desire to emphasize the perpetual virginity of Mary. I see him as a strong young man, perhaps a few years older than Our Lady, but in the prime of his life and work. You don't have to wait to be old or lifeless to practice the virtue of chastity. Purity comes from love, and the strength and gaiety of youth are no obstacle for noble love. Joseph had a young heart and a young body when he married Mary, when he learned of the mystery of her divine motherhood, when he lived in her company, respecting the integrity God wished to give the world as one more sign that he had come to share the life of his creatures. Anyone who cannot understand a love like that knows very little of true love and is a complete stranger to the Christian meaning of chastity, end of quote. So he's St. Jose Maria is very known for his blunt talk. And I like when he says, you don't have to be old or lifeless to practice the virtue of purity, all right? And it's for the young as well. And it comes from love. It comes from love. And just because you're young, that doesn't mean that you're going to have to, you know, you automatically have to give into impurity. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. God does not ask us to do things that aren't possible. And we can do that with his grace. We can do that with his grace. It reminds me a lot of what Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount. When Jesus says, hey, you've heard it said, do not commit adultery. I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And so Pope John Paul II, when he was talking about that in his Theology of the Body, he said, you know, some people read this and they think, well, then who can be saved? You know, if you even look at someone with lust, wow, you're guilty of committing adultery in the heart. Well, who can be saved? Well, it is possible. It's not possible with purely human effort, of course, but it is possible with God. God makes it possible for us to overcome this with his grace, with his help. And so I guess maybe part of the question here is how old is old when it comes to Joseph? I think there might be an answer within here. But here's the new thing that I found out. And I was doing some research for the biblical roots of the rosary, talking about the Annunciation, all that sort of stuff, and came across this interesting interview with the Catholic scholar, Dr. Brant Petre. And by the way, you're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149. And if you don't know who Brant Petre is, he is an incredible scholar, but he's also really good at bringing things down to a popular level. He's really good at teaching because he makes things understandable. He makes the difficult easy. And so he's written a lot of great books, and a lot of these books are aimed at lay people like you and me, such as Jesus and the Jewish Roots of the Eucharist. He wrote a book called The Case for Jesus. It's a book I highly recommend that's really good on can you trust the Gospels, what they say about Jesus, how do we know they're true, how do we know that what they say about Christ is reliable, did Jesus rise from the dead? He kind of covers all those basic topics. And every time, I've seen Brant Petre give presentations at conferences before, and every time he gives a talk, he always gets a standing ovation. It's always really good. So he's not a dry scholar. He really does have the ability to communicate. So he was interviewed on Matthew Leonard's podcast not too long ago, just a few days ago. And he was talking about this question of whether Joseph was old or whether he was young. And again, this is not a matter of faith. You can believe that Joseph was old if you want. You can believe he was young. It doesn't matter. I mean, obviously, God knows how old he really was, and we'll find out in heaven. But it's not, if you hold to one or the other, it doesn't mean, there's not one Catholic position. Some Catholics think he was older, some don't. But Brant Petre said, you know what, if you really read the Bible carefully, it actually says that Joseph was younger. And I said, really? Okay, I got to hear this. So he started talking about Luke's Gospel, the two Annunciations in Luke's Gospel. You say, well, hang on, Cale, I thought there was only one Annunciation. No, there were two. And I mentioned this on the Biblical Roots of the Rosary. There's first the Annunciation to Zechariah, because before Gabriel, the archangel, goes to Mary for the Annunciation that we know, that's one of the mysteries of the Rosary, there was also an Annunciation to Zechariah before that. That was his first stop, Gabriel, to go to the temple. Zechariah is the priest on duty, and he says, by the way, you're going to be the dad of John the Baptist. And Zechariah is like, not going to happen, because I'm too old. And he's like, oh, really? Well, I'm Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and this is going to happen because you didn't believe me. Guess what? You're not going to be able to speak for a while. So, you know, boom. And you can't speak again until John is born. But if you look at Luke chapter 1, verse 18, when this is really cool, when the angel speaks to Zechariah, here's what Zechariah says back to him. You know, you and your wife Elizabeth are going to have a kid. And he says in Luke 1:18, he says, "How shall I know this? For I am an old man, and my wife is advanced in years." I am an old man. Now, later on, when the angel goes to Mary in Nazareth, here's what Gabriel says to Mary. And this is in Luke chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. And it talks about Mary being betrothed to, I'm just finding the text here, Mary being betrothed to a virgin, betrothed to a man whose name was Joseph of the house of David. Now, it's interesting because it just says she was betrothed to or engaged to a man. So Zechariah says, "I'm an old man. How is this possible? We're, you know, my wife is past childbearing years." And Mary is engaged to simply a man. Now, this is where Brent Petrie brought something out that I'd never heard before. So there's this guy named Philo, and I don't know if you've ever heard of Philo. Philo was a Jewish philosopher who lived in Alexandria, Egypt, in the Roman Empire, and he lived at the same time as Jesus. He died in the year 50 in the first century. You know, Jesus was crucified about, you know, 30 or 33 AD. Philo died when he was 75 years old, about, he was in the year 50 AD. So he was contemporary of Jesus, same time period, lived at the same time. So he actually wrote a lot of stuff about these words, the words for an old man, the word for a young man, and the word for just a regular man, okay, in the middle of his, you know, life, or if you will. So here are the words. So Philo talks about this. The Greek word for young man is neoniskos. Neoniskos. That's a really young man. So somebody who's from, that would be classified, somebody who's 18 to 27 years old would be a neoniskos, a young man. And then the word for a man, the word that's a man, that's the word that's in Luke's gospel in the original Greek text, when it talks about Mary being engaged to Joseph, who is a man, it's a different word. It's aner, the Greek word aner, which is a man from the ages of 28 to 49. So this is according to Philo. And then there's a separate word for older man or old man. And that would be somebody from the ages of 49 to 56. So if you're in that category, I hate to break it to you, Philo thinks you're old. So that word is presbyte. And that is actually the word that's applied to when Zechariah talks to the angel. He says, "I'm an old man. I'm a presbyte. And by the way, you might have heard of the Presbyterian Church. That's where that name comes from. And the English word priest also comes from this root word presbyter. Presbyter. And if you read the Greek New Testament, the word presbyter refers to the priests of the early church. The English translation is priest. And that's why the Presbyterian Church calls themselves the Presbyterian Church. So the presbyters were the sort of elders of the church. And that's what the word presbyte or presbyter means. It means an elder, a senior person, somebody who's supposed to be wise, has the wisdom of years. Now, obviously, not all priests are older. And hopefully they're all wise. And hopefully they're all holy. But that's where it comes from. So that is really interesting. So when Brant Petre said this, I was like, wow, I have never heard this before. Philo lays out, there's a different word for each stage of your life in Greek. And so when Luke says Joseph was a man, he can't mean old man. He can't, because Luke already used the term old man just a few verses before to describe Zechariah. So if he wanted to say Joseph was an old man, he simply would have used that term because he knew about it. And by the way, Luke knows his Greek really, really, really well. When you read the Gospel of Luke, it is excellent Greek. And the Acts of the Apostles, Luke was really good with his Greek. It's approaching classical level Greek. Luke's writings and the letter to the Hebrews in the New Testament, they're the best Greek. It's really, really elegant, really amazing. So Luke knows his stuff. He certainly knows the different terms for a young man, a regular man, and an old man. And so he describes Zechariah is the old man. He describes Joseph as just this man who's in his prime years of 28 to 49 years old. So Joseph was a strong guy. And this makes sense if this is the case because, hey, Joseph had to take the Holy Family to Egypt in the middle of the night. He had to go on all these journeys. A lot was expected of him, and he had the strength to do it. So part of this, part of the concept of Joseph being an older man comes to us from this document I mentioned before called the Proto-Evangelium of James. It's a second century document. It's not in the Bible. It's what's known as an apocryphal gospel. And it tries to fill in some of the blanks about Jesus' early life and Mary's early life. And what it says in that book, this Proto-Evangelium of James, the second century document, it says that Joseph was about 90 years old, and that these brothers of Jesus, quote-unquote, Simon, Joseph, Jude, the sisters, they're all from this previous marriage. So why did the early Christians write this? Well, yeah, I agree with Brant Petre that part of it might be an apologetic. They're trying to explain to Gentiles, because there's a lot of people converting to Christianity, they're coming to belief in Jesus, and they're asking the question, how is it possible that Mary could be married to Joseph, but she's a perpetual virgin? How is that possible? Well, what they tried to do in this Proto-Evangelium of James is say that, hey, Joseph is at death's door pretty much. He's almost 90. He has no desire to have kids. He's too old. He's too tired. So it was sort of an effort to make the perpetual virginity of Mary more plausible. That's how the argument goes to new converts. Well, there's a little bit more to this. I'm going to get to this right after the break. 1-888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. 888-914-9149. You can tweet at me at Cale Clark, Clark with an E, K-L-C-A-L-E, Cale Clark. And last time I checked, that's who I am. Although, you know, we go through stages, right? You know, we become different people. As Batman said, we all wear masks, you know, from time to time. But anyways, having said that, we're talking about Joseph. Who was he? Was he an old guy? Was he a young man? Well, scholar Brant Petre thinks that he was actually young. He thinks he was somewhere between 28 and 49 years of age in his prime. That's the age I'm at, so that's obviously the peak. And he's basing this on the fact that there are different words in Greek for a really young guy, 18 to 27. There's a word just means man, which would refer to somebody in their from 28 to 49 years old. And then it's a coveted demographic for advertisers, of course. But Joseph didn't watch TV. And then an older man would be 49 to 56. And so Zechariah says, I'm an old man. I can't become a dad. My wife's too old. It's not going to happen. Joseph, however, is younger. And this is what... No, so this is the concept that Joseph is in his prime. The purity thing. Now, okay, that all makes a lot of sense to me. Now, it's not a super slam dunk, though, that Joseph could not have been somebody who had a previous marriage. His wife died, and these children are from these brothers and sisters of Jesus were from a previous marriage, because he still would have had plenty of time to have children from a previous marriage and become a widower and still be fairly young. Because think about it, even under this scenario, he's still a lot older than Mary, right? It's not like they're both teenagers under this scenario. Remember, there is another special word for a younger guy, and that's not what Luke uses for Joseph. So let's say he's at the lower limits of the prime age man, okay? So he would be about maybe 12, somewhere between 12 and 17 years older than Mary. So that's still a pretty big difference. You could have a lot of kids in 17 years, right? And your wife could pass away. So under that scenario, he could still be her protector, have no intention of having a romantic relationship with her. That's at least possible, right? But it does put them closer in the same age category. It's possible that he was only a few years older than her. So I get the full weight of that argument. Paul is calling from Youngstown, Ohio. Hi, Paul.
Gail, your last speculation there, it's what I believe, that Joseph might have been 15 to 20 years, maybe 20 years older, which would have made, if Mary were 15, he could have been 35, and he could have had kids 10 years earlier when he was 25 and his wife passed away. So I think he was young enough to support the family, mm-hmm. but old enough to be, you know, considered a man. And then 30 years beyond 35 would have made him 65 when Christ began his ministry. And by that time, he had probably passed away.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Paul. I'm going to get into that right now, actually. So I appreciate that call. As Paul, faithful listener to the program, calling from Youngstown, Ohio. Appreciate that call. Let me talk about the death of Joseph for a second. But just before we do that, Brant Petre says in one of his other books, which I haven't read. I haven't read this one. I'm looking forward to getting to it eventually. I've bought a copy for a friend because I've got a friend who, one of the things that's keeping him out of the church is the Marian teachings of the church. He just doesn't understand them, doesn't quite, you know, can't buy into them. He's a smart guy. And so I sent him Brant Petre's book called Jesus and the Jewish Roots of Mary. Because Brant is really, really good at situating Jesus in the first century Jewish world. You can't understand Jesus properly. You can't rip him out of his context, okay? He can't understand what he was trying to do without situating him in the Jewish world of the first century. And so it's called Second Temple Judaism, that whole period of time. And Brant Petre is really, really good at that. He did his grad studies in that area. So in his book, Jesus and the Jewish Roots of Mary, he's got a whole section on, he thinks that the brothers and sisters of Jesus are actually children of Mary and Clopas. And Mary was, of course, at the crucifixion. She was at that scene. And Clopas, he says, is Joseph's brother. So they would be cousins of Jesus. That's part of the cousin view. And so he's saying, look, if these kids, these other kids, are actually children of Mary and Clopas, they would be Jesus's cousins. And Joseph would not have been a widower, you know, if Mary was his wife who had these other kids, this other Mary. He would have been a bigamist, not a widower. I mean, he would have been married to two people at the same time because Mary and the other Mary, Mary of Nazareth, they're alive at the same time. So that's clearly out of the question. But let me just talk really quickly about the death of Joseph. So if Joseph is still comparatively still young, if he's still in the prime of his life, as it were, why is he not around during Jesus' public ministry? Well, here's the answer. Life expectancy. The life expectancy for a Jewish male in Roman Palestine, some think it was as low as 29 years old on average. So some people say it's as old as 35. So life expectancy for various reasons was not very long. And so if you live to 50, you were considered definitely on the old side. And there were some people who lived longer, of course. Zechariah would have been in that category maybe. But Caiaphas, the high priest, he was probably no older than 50 years old. In all the Jesus movies, he's portrayed with a, you know, big head of white hair and a long beard. He's really old. No. He was probably no more than 50. So it's entirely plausible that Joseph passed away at what we might consider a very young age, but especially after a life of hard labor and... But still, under this scenario, he would have been definitely strong enough to take the Holy Family to Egypt and back. He would have been in the prime of his physical life. But that life expectancy was pretty short. So he could have been on the young side and still died before Jesus' public ministry. So that's, I just found that a fascinating discussion. And so I want to thank Brant Petre for that. Brant, if you're listening, you're doing great work. We'll have to have you on the show sometime. Really appreciate that. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. And see you, Scott. You are there. I'm gonna hold off for a second, Scott. Scott called yesterday, and I promised to get to his question. He actually called back himself which is really exciting. So please stay on the line, Scott. We are going to get to you. I do want to talk to Irma in Phoenix. Irma, because it's kind of on topic here. Irma, how are you? Thanks for calling in.
Good. I truly believe Joseph was younger, not, I mean, a man. But also, when people say, well, you know, Jesus had brothers and sisters, but you don't hear about them living with Joseph and Mary. I mean, he would have had a whole clan full of kids if they had been born before to take him to Bethlehem. Hmm. You know, that doesn't, I mean, I don't know. Would you leave your kids behind if you got married and that's, a new wife and then,
well, that's
you
a good,
had to go and count a census?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, unless the kids were older and could take care of themselves, like why wouldn't you bring them with you? That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that before, Irma. That's a good argument. Absolutely. If these kids were hanging around, he was looking after them, he was responsible for them, why wouldn't they have come to Egypt as well? Unless they just weren't mentioned by the gospel writer, doesn't put them in because they're not important. No, they're important too, of course. Everyone's important in God's eyes. But I see what you're saying there, Irma. I feel the weight of that argument. That's a good point. That's a really good point. So thanks for calling.
Because when they say Jesus, when they say your brothers and sisters and your mother are here to Jesus, and here he is between 30 and 33 years old, you know, Anyway, it just kind of hit me like, I wouldn't leave my kids behind.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, and that's something that I'm not sure I've read that anywhere. So that's a great thing to bring up, Irma. You missed your calling. You should have been a biblical scholar. Maybe you are a biblical scholar. That was Irma calling from Phoenix. I appreciate the call, Irma. Call anytime. Okay. All right. Let's. I appreciate that. Let's go to Marie, who's calling from Chicago. Hi, Marie.
Hi. Yes, I want to say Joseph was older. I want to say that he was blessed with being able to be an older man during that time before Noah and everything. Everybody lived to be 100 or 300 some years old. And I think he was blessed to be older, and therefore he was still stronger, and he was able to protect Mary. And as the last caller, Irma, had said, Jesus was on the cross, looked down, and said, this is your mother. So he basically was telling the world, from here on, Mary's going to be everybody's mother, and we are all brothers and sisters in the eyes of God.
Yeah, Marie, and that's certainly true, that Mary is our spiritual mother as well. And that's one of the reasons why John is not named in the Gospel of John, the beloved disciple. Most people think it's him. And Mary is never used. Her name is never used either. She's called woman. That's because it's not because Jesus is being rude to his mom. It's because she is the new Eve. She's the new Eve. And I'm going to talk about that actually very, very soon in a couple of days on the Faith Explained show. When we talk about the biblical roots of the rosary, I'm going to talk about the miracle of changing water to wine in Cana of Galilee, and he calls her woman there too. And there's a reason for that. It has to do with Mary being the new Eve. But so John, this beloved, he's called the beloved disciple, but really he's a stand-in for all of us. He is the faithful disciple. He never leaves Jesus' side. He doesn't run away like the others. He's even there at the foot of the cross. He defers to Peter, as we all should defer to the Pope. And at any rate, he's there. And so she is his mother. He's also the stand-in for all of us. So this is the church really at the beginning and in its infancy, and so she is our spiritual mother as well. But in terms of the long lifespans, in the book of Genesis and in the Old Testament, we see these incredibly long lifespans, and some people think it's because it took sin a while to, you know, kind of proliferate throughout the world, the ravages of the consequences of sin, even in the physical world, causing disease, death, shorter lifespans. It took some time for that to happen. That's one theory. But Joseph, again, life expectancy in the first century in Roman Palestine was comparatively short. And that's for a lot of different reasons. Healthcare, diet, all kinds of different things come into play. But it was actually fairly short. 50 would have been long in the tooth. 35 was the average age of death, according to some. So that's 29, even some say. I think that might be a little low, but still, it's not what we think. So So I don't think he lived to be a ripe old age in our... That's just what I think. That's just what I think. It's a fascinating topic of discussion. Let's go to Frank now in North Smithfield, Rhode Island. Hi, Frank.
Hey, Kyle. How are you?
I'm doing well.
I love listening to you.
Thank you,
you
sir.
Always talk about Bible stories. I love it.
Well, thanks.
About Joseph and Mary, right? I was flipping around Amazon looking for books, and I came across books by the Venerable Anne Catherine Emmerich.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And because I love the Blessed Virgin Mary, I want to know all about her, so I ordered the book. Of course, I did the Dolores Passion also. And so I read that book. Her books are very laborious to read.
Okay. Yeah, I've never read them.
All over the place. You have?
I have not. I have not. But I have heard that. Yeah, they're, some people said that to me as well. Yeah, but so what does she say about all this?
But you're smarter than me. You'll figure. You're not. It won't be laborious. Oh,
I don't know about that. but yeah, what does she say about what does Anne Catherine Emmerich say about this, Frank?
Well, in her visions, I'm going to go to. Let's see, Anna and Joachim. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anna. Well, obviously, that's the Immaculate Conception of Mary when Anna was with Mary,
yep.
and during birth. Mm-hmm. And how the thing about Joseph is that he was like Mary, born, lived, and died chaste. Okay, as did Mary. This is her books from a mystic who went back in time in her dreams and was actually there and saw everything. She describes colors, everything. Just, she just describes things as if you can describe just what's in your room where you're sitting right now. And I was so fascinated by this book. It'll blow you away. And it gives you another take and a stronger faith in what we believe in. And Mary was born exuding from Anna's body into her hands. There's always angels around all the time. Emmerich is now a saint also. I don't know who canonized her.
Is she canonized or is she somewhere in process?
Yeah, she was, because the books, it says still venerable, you know, like Bishop Sheen. He's still waiting, I think, but anyway. Jesus exhumed from Mary's body also, and that was in her lap while she was kneeling down.
Okay, so let me just jump in, just because we got to get to a break soon. I'm up against a break, but just to mention what, if you just tuned in, what Frank was talking about is the writings of Anne Catherine Emmerich, a spiritual visionary. This would be under the realm of what we would call private revelations. And is this something, now, is this the way it actually happened? Or is this a vision that she had with a mystical meaning to it? That's a good question. I'm going to get into after the break, hopefully we'll have time for this. I do want to get into this whole thing of private revelations. Do you have to believe these private revelations to be a Catholic? But Frank, I do appreciate the call. Call anytime. Thanks for your kind words. We'll be right back after this break on the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149.
This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
We're going to catch the last train home with John Mayer, and this is the last segment of the show for today, 888-914-9149. We're going to go to the phones right now. We're going to go to Scott, who's calling from Valencia. And Scott, you called yesterday, and we kind of ran out of time, and I'm glad you called back because I did want to get to your question. And you had a question about the miracle of the sun at Fatima that took place on October the 13th, 1917. We just celebrated the anniversary of that just a few days ago. And your question, Scott, was basically, how come there are no photos? There's photos of the crowd, but no photos of the sun itself. It's kind of like, I think you said this yesterday, it's a little bit like if an alien landed on planet Earth, if people took pictures of just the crowd looking at the alien instead of the alien itself. That seems a little weird to you, right?
Yeah. Hi, Cale. Thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate it. And I had a little bit of a chance to formulate my question a little better, or my concern, per se. And that is, the Fatima events basically culminated in this solar phenomenon and what I believe was it was for the Blessed Mother to lend credence to the seriousness of the messages. In other words, these messages were basically unprecedented at the time in the history of Portugal. And so I think that this phenomenon just occurred in the first place just to say, hey, look, there's going to be a public phenomenon that's going to lend credence to what's being said here. And lo and behold, we've got photographs of, there was photographers there, or at least one photographer that took pictures of the crowd. Mm-hmm. And you see their gasping faces. Yep. And if their faces are gasping, that would mean that the event was actually taking place right when the photographer was taking the picture. And the elephant in the room, in my opinion, and that's what I'm going to call it for lack of a better way of saying it, is that I just find it so convenient, or what, for lack of a better way of saying it, that we don't seem to have any pictures of the sun. Mm-hmm. And yes, I use that analogy of the alien. I think it still holds well. And yeah. I'm really concerned. I'm a Catholic. I believe in. I'm very well versed in my faith and in visions and visionaries, and the Blessed Mother brought me back to my faith. So I'm really struggling with this, and I haven't been able to get a really good answer to it. I was hoping maybe you had some insight into that.
Well, I'll try, Scott. And I think it's a really good question. And obviously, you're coming at this as a person of faith. You are, obviously, as you said, a practicing Catholic. Our Lady brought you back to the faith, and that's incredible. And after listening to the show yesterday, another listener actually emailed me, a listener named Hugh. And thanks for your email, Hugh. He mentioned that at the time, back in 1917, he said that, and I don't know much about camera technology, but he said the cameras at that time probably did not have solar filters. So even if they did try, and maybe people did try to take pictures of the phenomena of the sun, the miracle of the sun, it just didn't turn out, but the pictures of the crowd did. That's also a real live possibility for sure. But I wanted to actually... So in terms of that, that could be the reason why there's no pictures of the sun. It just wasn't possible technically to do it at that time. I don't know. I'll have to do some more research on the photography angle of that, or whether people tried to. But I thought, Scott, it might be good for people to know, and this might be helpful to you too. You may know this already, but it might be a surprise to a lot of listeners that as a Catholic, you don't actually have to believe in any of these private revelations. If you don't want to, or if you don't think that may be shocking to you, but this would be considered, again, a private revelation. Now, there's a public aspect of it, of course, with the miracle of the sun in this case. But, and I personally do believe, by the way, in Fatima, but I've met some other people that don't believe in certain Marian apparitions, even the ones approved by the church. And I know there's a ton of them that have not been approved by the church, that the church is still actively investigating. I'm not going to get into those right now, but maybe one day we will, time permitting, but I just don't have the bandwidth at the moment. But having said that, this is often shocking to people that as a Catholic, the only thing that you need to believe, that you must believe, is public revelation. Public revelation.
Right, the positive faith.
Exactly. And so...
I'm very well aware of that. It's just that this particular apparition was truly, truly unprecedented in so many different ways. The messages that were given, the severity of it, the depth of it, what happened, what the visions were about, still being unfolded today. And like I said, I truly believe that the solar phenomenon was really unprecedented as well in terms of visions. that of, you know, the, of the Blessed Mother. And I think that the reason for it was to give credence to it because of the depth of the of the of the messages. And I think that's why that solar phenomenon occurred even in the first place. And but then, like I said, it's just it. I understand this concept of maybe the photographs, you know, could have been taken, and you know that the film wasn't advanced enough to be able to capture it. But the fact that we don't have any photographs of even them trying and publishing them would seem that at least we would have something like, hey, look, we did take them. Here it is. Here, well, this is what.
Yeah, came. I mean, that's a good point, Scott. Did people try? And at best, it's an argument from silence right now because we don't know whether they did or not. And maybe there may be some real historians listening of Fatima who can chime in on that. But I thank you very much for your call, Scott. I really do appreciate that. And thanks for calling back in and thanks for listening. I'm so glad that you called back. And I do want to talk a little bit about this whole concept of public versus private revelation, though, is that Cardinal Ratzinger, who obviously became Pope Benedict XVI, when he was the head of the CDF, the Congregation of the Doctrine for the Faith, kind of the doctrinal watchdog, around the time when he released a document and the church released a document on the last secret of Fatima, talking about that, he did sort of get into this a little bit, the situation of public versus private revelation. And again, as Catholics, what we have to believe is the public teaching of the church. So when people join cults are often very esoteric in their teaching. And by that, I mean, you don't find out certain of their teachings until you join the group. It's all sort of a secret society. The Catholic Church has never been like that. Its doctrines are public. They're published for all to see. There's no secret stuff, okay? There's no secret sauce that you get when you're an insider. It's all public. So that's Catholic. That's universal. So the teachings of the Church, the scriptures, the dogmas of the Church, they're all known. But these private revelations are sometimes when God speaks to an individual or maybe groups of individuals, like the Children of Fatima in this case, at a specific time in a specific place for a specific reason, maybe for that time period to remind people of a certain thing or to get them back on track. And so Cardinal Ratzinger, he said that when you talk about public and private revelation, they're different not only in degree, but also in essence. What does that mean? Well, the public revelation, it's not just that public revelation is for all people, which it is for all people. And the private revelation is often only for some people. It's time, place, identity, only for some people. But they're two different kinds of revelation. They're two different kinds of revelation. And Jimmy Akin wrote an article about this, back in the year, when was this? Probably around the year, I don't know, like 2000 and, I'm going to say 2001 or something. I can't remember. But anyways, so Cardinal Ratzinger, in his article, he mentioned that Cardinal Ratzinger talked about public revelation really referring to the revealing action of God, finding its expression ultimately in the Old and New Testaments. And he always said, too, Cardinal Ratzinger, that dogma, church teachings, defined church teachings, are really, in many ways, just an interpretation of Scripture, the definitive interpretation of it. But public revelation came to an end with the definitive word to mankind, not just in the scriptures, but the word made flesh, Jesus Christ. And so private revelation is really about all the visions and revelations that have taken place since the completion of the New Testament. That's what he said. And so private revelation is different than public. If for public revelation, you've got to respond to it in faith. And if you don't respond in faith to public revelation of the church, the public teaching of the church, the dogmas of the church, if you don't believe those, it's a mortal sin. It imposes an obligation of belief. It requires Catholic faith to hold it. So if you reject, say, one of the Marian dogmas, you don't hold the Catholic faith. And if you persist in that, you know, you're on the wrong track spiritually. But private revelation is different. And private revelation really has three elements to it. It has to, number one, for it to be legit from God, it can't be contrary to faith or morals. It can't be contrary to the public teaching of the church in these areas. Number two, it has to be lawful to make it public. And number three, the faithful can accept it with prudence, with prudence. So you don't have to believe the private revelations. You don't have an obligation to believe them, but you may choose to believe in the ones that the church has said, hey, we don't find anything contrary to the faith in these, and we think they're legit, like in the case of Fatima or Lourdes or Guadalupe. We think they're legit. They're worthy of your consideration, and it can help you in your faith, but you don't have to believe. And in the same way, it's a little bit like the rosary. This might freak people out, but the rosary is a private devotion. If a Catholic never prayed the rosary, that would technically be okay. I think you should, for sure. But it's something God provides for our help. But you don't need to pray the rosary, technically speaking, really technically speaking, to be a Catholic. I do. I think you should, too. The popes all say that. That's why we're talking about the rosary on The Faith Explained, the biblical roots of the rosary. Man, we've run out of time. I can't believe it again. But everybody who's on the line, Rich, I see your call. Call back tomorrow. It's a great question. I hope to talk to all of you guys tomorrow who couldn't get through. Please do call back. Lucas Holt produced. Patrick Alog took your calls. We will be back with another fresh episode tomorrow of The Cale Clark Show and the week that was, because it's Friday. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.